Empire Lines uncovers the unexpected, often two-way, flows of empires through art. Interdisciplinary thinkers use individual artworks as artifacts of imperial exchange, revealing the how and why of the monolith empire.
Are you sure? Yeah.
I'm gonna... here.
Okay, cool.
I'm not going anywhere.
Okay, good. I'm just gonna double check if we do have 5 minutes. In this episode, interdisciplinary artist Osman Yousafzada crafts stories of working class migration experiences, unwrapping the influence of his mother and many other textile makers in his British-Pakistani diaspora community in Birmingham via Queer Feet.
I'm Osman Yousafzada. I'm an artist and a writer, and you're here at my show at Charleston.
Osman, many may have first encountered your work as a fashion designer, but you work across disciplines and in 2022 published your first book, The Go-Between, which is also an introduction for this exhibition here at Charleston. But your craft is grounded in your childhood, watching your mother, a maker of shalwar kameez in the British Pakistani community in Birmingham in the 1980s. It's one that you've characterised in the past as an ultra-Orthodox Pashtun Pakistani community. Can you tell me a bit about your experience as a child growing up and when you first came to encounter fabrics?
I've been making work for the last sort of 12 years, but kind of not really confident enough to show it for the last sort of 5 years. But it all kind of stems from this idea of recording these memories or these positions of power and intimacy across kind of class, race. My father comes from a generation of carpenters and so does my mother. So there's a whole idea of being able to kind of work with your hands, which is really quite key. And this world of textiles that I grew up in, or making basically. There's one conversation where learning it in a kind of Western world, which becomes quite a privileged conversation about using that craft to try and tell stories and seeing them as artworks rather than actually just a way of creating your income or commodification. So when these women actually followed the men and they immigrated, there wasn't a world that they could easily integrate into. So they created parallel worlds, and everyone needs to clothe and feed themselves. You know, my mom would make quilts at home, and those quilts were when kind of aunts would get together. So we kind of never had these conventional quilts. There were always these heavy, like 15 kilo quilts that sort of would swaddle you to. So there's this real way of how do you really make the most, and this idea of no waste, and this idea of the disposable milk crates were turned into kind of like footstools. You know, rather than just consuming or just sort of putting everything away, we made everything. And I think that's actually something which is really quite important.
Earlier, you described your mother as the original artist in your life. And we're looking now at a work from your Queer Feet series, which draws on Afghan, Baluch and Turkish rugs and tablecloths, textiles that you've embroidered and you've also topped with found objects, including some works that you've created, objects wrapped in what looks like black plastic bags, but you've reimagined them in ceramics. There's also a ladder that's made out of black plaits, the same that are shared in an installation that was recently on view at Whitechapel called An Immigrant's Room of Her Own. Can you talk about this work and how it speaks to these domestic spaces?
Home for very many people is a kind of domesticity as a very powerful tool of healing, whether you come back into those four walls and you can somehow feel safe or sometimes not safe. Objects within that home become recharged, magical kind of like spaces which can actually reinvigorate, create healing, and a space where you can become a superhero and face the world again, basically. So they're kind of reconfigurations of everything as objects become kind of embodiments which have kind of power or guardians who kind of protect you. So there's a whole kind of series of symbolisms within the work. The rug is actually from the house of Charleston, But on it are these like kind of offerings, but they're also kind of like a way that the carpet is used as a tablecloth, and on the floor, and a sense of community of kind of coming together. I showed you earlier that my mum would wrap everything up, and that wrapping everything up was a kind of barrier to create a space which was basically her space. So it's how do you create sort of like your own privacy within familial spaces, within domestic environments. So I think those are, even though they were quite humble objects, like bowls or teacups, pans or pots, through the act of wrapping, they become quite politically kind of charged.
You mentioned guardians earlier. There are also works on paper that are partly inspired by characters in the Falnama, a book of omens used by fortune tellers in Iran, India and Turkey during the 16th and 17th centuries. But with reference to the fact that this is quite politically charged, you also reinterpret those figures to talk about more contemporary politics.
The Falnama is this book where it's the idea of chance, where you open up a page and it's supposed to predict your future. These tapestries and these works on paper also become similar to kind of tarot cards, where as a working class immigrant you don't necessarily know if your passage is going to be successful or your life in basically the global north, which is kind of quite key, this idea of power, chance, whether you become a successful immigrant or not. Like, you know, if you're a middle class immigrant, you come into a job either as a doctor or a particular type of things, there is ways that you feel that that world is not so alien to you. And when you come when you don't necessarily have the codes to access that world so easily, you don't necessarily know, even if you're middle class, if you're going to be a successful immigrant or not. But I think the kind of working class conversation is much more kind of problematic in a way.
Many of the works in these series also incorporate industrial hazard tape, the same that you use in More Immigrants, Please, a public art installation that you've created with Artichoke, which speaks to borders. You also published a book a few years ago, The Go-Between, and you've opened another exhibition recently at the Potteries Museum in Stoke-on-Trent. What is your relationship with different media, and do you see different media helping you tell different stories?
I think I write and I work with textiles and I work with ceramics, so they're kind of like the same, and a lot of it actually comes from drawings, and the works here were actually kind of a residency that I did at the Birmingham School of Art. I see them as the same story, but sometimes I use different mediums to tell the same story. You know, I think there's a kind of very holistic approach to the storytelling, whether it's text-based, 3D or kind of like 2D or working with materials, but it all sort of spans this world of domesticity for me, ideas of homemaking and safe and these rituals of kind of like this quest for belonging, and the easiest place to kind of belong or find safety is within probably your four walls. Generally, it's this idea of recharging and regeneration, whether it's the studio, maybe sometimes it's in a club, but it's these safe places where you kind of reimagine and reconstruct materials to try and understand a place for you to kind of be through your own kind of immigrant histories.
I also find that the use of tape speaks to barriers within arts and media more widely. Your first solo exhibition was held at the Icon Gallery in Birmingham.
Yeah.
And in 2021, you covered Selfridges in the city, calling it the largest canvas in the world.
I too am homegrown. These paths of belonging, every atom of my blood, came forth at the Queen Elizabeth. This very ground bore my inaugural steps. Don't forget who you are or where you've come from, Dad said. The shaping of my redemption, from Brum to London to Brum. The tangled yarns of memory, the questions of my belonging, the roots of my ethnicity, the movements of my limbs, the flowering of my autonomy, the making of my mark, the flight to freedom and back again, the quest for wholeness, the fires of creative rage. My tongue too is my weapon, my spears of hope, of new possibilities, of new connectivities. In this city that gave the world a thousand trades, its silver, gold and diamond rings, Charles Dickens wore one, summoning Aladdin's obedient genie to work for the city's disposal. Just like Kipling's dark-faced crew. Din, din, din. Though I've belted you and flayed you, by the living God that made you, you're a better man than I am, Gunga Din. The genies came from the east, from the west, to give shine to its heart once more. Now under its not-so-clear stark skies, its red brick seats of knowledge, its blueprint for the Manhattan Project, its canals more than Venice, its shires, bogs and Tolkien trails, its temples, steeples and minarets, I sing the anthem of my longing, of disorders to be cured, of infinities to be found, of multitudes to be my own. I too am homegrown.
It was the largest canvas in the world of any building. It was really big. I can't remember how many. It was like 15 or I can't remember, 1,000. I don't know, on one side, yeah.
In a previous episode that we recorded about Palestinian embroidery, we talked about the binary between arts and crafts and how often craft is used as a way of subjugating arts that are created in the home. I wonder for you, do you see a distinction between textiles as art and textiles as fashion?
I didn't know what art school was until I kind of came to London and I actually started sort of meeting people who were doing more kind of interesting stuff than I was doing, or what had been signposted to do from the upbringing that I had or the access that my parents had. The body was actually a very easy canvas to actually create identity on, you know, without actually going through a pedagogical system of trying to be an artist. So textiles then was actually, you know, creating an identity which you could put on yourself and somehow go clubbing. But I think all of that is art. I don't think it's actually any different to not being art. I think the idea when you start putting it into a museum-like spaces, like the works here, you automatically create a distance. You're forced to kind of look. They're kind of permission spaces, but also they can be quite meditative spaces because your blood pressure goes down. Unlike you go shopping somewhere and then it just becomes like, yeah, is this going to look great on me? I think there can be quite healing spaces. And there can be spaces which you can go and just allows you to reimagine yourself as well. But unless you're super rich, you know, the access in the museums is actually kind of quite important.
Osman, thank you ever so much for taking the time to talk to me today.
Thank you so much for having me on Empire Lines.
Osman Yusuf Zada runs at Charleston and Firle until the 14th of April 2024. For more, you can read my article. You'll find all the links in the episode notes. Empire Lines is produced by Yelena Sofronievich. For more episodes, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.